Hi, I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly Magazine.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're going to talk about our favorite whole grain combos, vegan eats in Philadelphia, and niche food magazines. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. It's actually something I've been reading for several months.
So what we want to talk about today is the beautiful new edition of Edible Philly that just came out. It's the winter edition. As you might have picked up from our intros, Joy is the editor of this lovely magazine. And we just wanted to go through it. So Joy.
Yeah, I wanted to encourage people to look around for it and to pick it up. Pardon our page turning here. There's many delightful stories in this magazine, but I just want to go over some of my most interesting little parts. You know, we always do this food checklist where we tell readers what we think are sort of little things worth tasting this season. And Boardroom Spirits launched this brandy made from beets.
Whoa.
It's very interesting. Well, you pour it into the glass and the more than the taste, like it just smells like a freshly cut open beet. It's so interesting.
Wow.
So that's one thing.
Oh, you've got one of my other favorites on this, the baked lemon ricotta from Claudio's.
Oh, yeah. Delicious.
So good for the holiday season.
We have a little food exploration of Philadelphia's Northeast, which happens to be the region that I'm from. But writer Sarah Maialano talks about her connection there and the restaurants that she loves. We have Alex Jones does this big story on local grains and cooking for local grains, which might be something you want to take a peek at if you're looking for some interesting options for your holiday baked goods. And local, of course. Oh, and then this story, we've been sitting on this story for a while. A writer, Estelle Tracy, in honor of her 37th birthday, she challenged herself to taste 37 bean-to-bar chocolates. And it's sort of about her exploration of the craft chocolate world.
And the picture, so pretty.
Yeah. And the crazy thing about this story is she never intended to like have a local focus. And she didn't have a local focus, but she did find out that one of her favorite bean-to-bar chocolates is made here in Philadelphia at Cezanne. Have you ever been there?
I have not.
They're kind of famous for their drinking chocolates, but they also have bars that they make, you know, from the cacao beans right there on site. I was so intrigued that I went there, and the drinking chocolates are phenomenal. The bars are phenomenal. It's really a local treasure. Cool. And your friend and mine, Tanaya Darlington, wrote about PS & Co., which is a place near Rittenhouse that has I don't want to say healthy because they're definitely sweet, high calorie type things, but wholesome treats that are free from various allergens and things that people are avoiding. And then we have a thing on local kegged wine,
which is so fascinating
to me. Like, I love the idea of kegged wine, and local wine is getting better and better. That story really takes a look at Paris Wine Bar, which has always been very committed to having local wines on tap. Anyway, I think you'll like it as much as I do, I hope.
It's a really lovely issue, Joy, and it makes me hungry, which is always a sign of a good issue, and so much interesting holiday suggestions and inspiration here, so I'm excited.
One other thing I want to say about it is, if you're a regular reader of Edible Philly, you know that we participate in Edible Community's Local Hero Awards every spring, and right now the voting is open. We have 4 nominees in each of 6 categories around local food, and if you go to ediblephilly.com, you can cast your ballot to see who the winners in each of those categories will be, and they'll be our local heroes this year. So, yeah. Find it, read it, love it. Tell me what you think. Where are we going from here?
So we're going to talk about whole grain combos. So Joy, take us away.
Right. Okay. So I have a particular whole grain combo that I love, and that is barley and wild rice.
Which sounds amazing to me.
These two grains cook at the same rate.
Mm-hmm.
They have distinct flavors, but they're both very flavorful, and they are brimming with prebiotics. And also the wild rice antioxidants. So they're kind of superfoods, if you ask me. And I like to cook up a big batch, keep it in the fridge, and then use it for a wide variety of things, either just like a side for, you know, whatever you're having for dinner, Or you can throw some on a salad.
Okay, wait, I want to go back.
Okay.
So do you do one-to-one? So one part barley, one part yes. wild rice? Mm-hmm. And then what's the ratio of grain to water?
I put in like, I've been making it in the Instant Pot lately, uh-huh. and I put in half a cup of barley, half a cup of wild rice, and then like 1 1/4 cup water.
Okay.
Or chicken stock.
Ooh.
And if I'm feeling fancy, I will saute a little butter and onion at the beginning, mm-hmm. and then put the grains in and toast them a bit. Which gives you sort of like a pilaf effect.
Okay.
But still, there you can put it cold right on your salad. It's very good. Or you can put it in a pan so that it gets a bit crisp on the edge, you know, mm-hmm. but still chewy on the inside. And then that's terrific on a salad.
That sounds great.
Another thing that I did with it recently was my husband was sick and I made him chicken soup. But instead of putting white noodles in, I put this 2-grain combo in there. And finally, I used it up in a frittata.
Which I love that idea.
It was a lot of grains to uh-huh. eggs too, but it turned out so good. Wild rice is so flavorful. I feel like it's really overlooked as a umami rich ingredient.
Well, one of my very favorite recipes in Liana Kristoff's book, Whole Grains for a New Generation, is there's this pumpkin and coconut milk and wild rice soup that is so good. And it's not as good with other grains too. Because the wild rice just brings so much flavor.
It's a really distinct flavor. Yeah. It's kind of hard to describe. It's savory. It's nutty. It has umami.
Yeah. Well, and just such good chew. Like it just feels good in your mouth. You know, it's funny. I don't really typically think about doing grains in combination. I tend to just do one at a time. But this makes me think that I need to look out for other grains that cook at similar rates and do some combinations.
Or even if they don't, I sometimes like to combine them anyway.
Really?
Like quinoa and brown rice. Mainly because I don't like quinoa on its own. or amaranth is great with the other, there's another like bird seedy type
millet?
One. Millet. Yeah. Right. Those two are really good together.
I'll have to try that. I'm a big fan of millet. I do love it. And what I do with millet is often, I mean, I make it so that it's not the healthiest thing in the world mm-hmm. because I wash the grain and then I put it in a dry pan and I toast it a little bit, add water. And then at the end of cooking, I add a couple tablespoons of butter mm-hmm. to sort of make it silky and creamy. And then I use it as a base for like braises, or I love to do beans and beans and greens on top of cooked millet. So
that sounds good.
Good.
The other thing about that particular
aromatic?
No. Amaranth.
Amaranth. Okay,
I cannot say it for some reason. And millet, they both pop. They uh-huh. puff. So I like to have those puffed up together for a topping for yogurt.
Yeah.
Or basically just for yogurt.
Yeah, no, I love doing puffed amaranth and millet because it's like those popped cereals that my, you know, totally unsweetened puffed cereals my mom used to get when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, I hated them. But now they're so nutty and rich tasting to me and sort of nostalgic.
I definitely like all of those things together, but really nothing takes the place of the barley wild rice combo.
I'm definitely going to try that because it sounds amazing.
I think it kind of came about because as a kid, Dan liked this type of packaged instant rice that was a combination of wild rice and white rice.
Huh.
And it was like, what can we put together with the wild rice that will sort of leaven it, but still be very healthy and whole grain? And barley is a winner.
I love barley. I mean, I often in summertime I make a salad of barley with chopped cucumber, red onion, feta, and a mustardy dressing.
Yeah.
It's really good. But I bet that would be good. You could do the barley and wild rice. That'd be great. So
my sister was in town.
Yeah.
And unlike we just talked in the episode we recorded about your sister who used to be a vegetarian and is now eating meat.
Yeah.
When we were kids, I was a vegetarian. My sister ate meat, but now she's a vegetarian. And she just had a week in Philadelphia where we did a lot of exploring around the vegan food scene.
Which we've got a great one here.
We do. And an interesting thing of what we did is like we didn't go to like Veg or B Street, which are the big red letter places. They're also pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
We went to mostly inexpensive places and not all of them were strictly vegan. So I just sort of wanted to
tell
you about what we had.
Please do.
We started at the Cantina, mm-hmm. which is like a – I don't know. How would you describe it? It's like a Mexican-ish bar.
Yeah.
But they have a large – vegan and vegetarian portion of their menu. And the coolest thing that we got there was beet tacos.
Which sound amazing.
It was roasted beets with toasted almonds on it and then some kind of like vegan crema.
Wow.
Really good. And Jill, my sister, was like not into ordering them. But then once we had them, she was like, yeah, these are terrific. Then there's Hip City Veg, which is, you know, our vegan fast food type place.
Yeah, which I love, honestly.
The crowds in there, that place gets busy.
It does. I sometimes will call my order in before I go over because there's one a couple blocks from me.
That is smart.
So I'll call the order in and then go and pick it up as opposed to waiting in line.
And after I felt bad for her because I sent her to Dizengoff, you know, knowing Dizengoff is the fast casual hummus slinging outpost of the Zahav, you know, crew. And I know they sell out a lot, so I sent her from my house to go eat there. I called to make sure they still had hummus, but then by the time she got there, they had just sold out.
Oh, no.
She was so heartbroken.
That's a bummer.
But then she made it back on another day, victorious, and she had her hummus topped with fried artichokes and pine nuts, and she said that it was the best food she ever ate.
Their hummus is pretty amazing.
Not that then they are by no means vegetarian, but they always have vegetarian options.
Yeah. Well, and I find that Dizengoff, sometimes I have some friends who are vegan and we'll get Dizengoff takeout. And if as long as you're careful about what you're ordering, it can be a completely vegan meal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get the things that don't have cheese or meat in them, it's pretty easy to steer clear.
It's really good.
And it's delicious.
And again, not expensive, like kind of shockingly inexpensive for how delicious it is. It's pretty, you pretty much always get out of there under $15, don't you think? Unless you have a beer or something. And then we discovered a newish place in my own neighborhood called The Tasty. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of it, but I don't know much about it beyond.
It's like, it's a vegan diner. They renovated a retro diner that was actually like from the 50s or 60s and renovated. That's not the right word. They sort of just like cleaned it. And put some design touches in. Uh-huh. It still like has that old school dinery feel. And we went there yesterday and shared a vegan BLT that was made with coconut bacon. If you've ever had that.
I have. There's one of the bars up in like Fishtown does a coconut.
Memphis Tap Room.
I think so.
And tater tots. It was so good. We really enjoyed it. Had it on rye bread. I have an Instagram of it.
Sounds great.
At Joy Manning if you want to see my photo. And then finally, we wrapped up at Ekta, vegetarian food. It's always good Indian curries, vegetarian. So that was our little sweep of the lesser expensive vegan food choices in the area.
Sounds great. You know, one of my vegan favorites that I recently discovered in my neighborhood is Bar Bon Bon.
Oh, she went there too.
Did she go there?
Yeah, actually.
And especially for lunch, it's not real expensive. And
they're open at lunch?
Uh-huh.
We should go there sometime.
Yeah, we should. And the option, they have like a lunch special. It doesn't have to be real expensive. And I really like what they're doing over there too. They have some really delicious vegan tacos.
Yeah. Jill said she ended up going there around 8 o'clock with she was here for a professional conference with some colleagues. And she said that it was like very crowded and hectic. And that she like wasn't totally relaxed.
Yeah, it's much nicer at lunchtime.
Yeah, so what do you get there?
I've just gotten an assortment of their tacos in the past. I feel like they change up. Like they had a cauliflower taco, they had a Brussels sprout taco. They also just have, you know, like really good chips and guacamole.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a good friend who's vegan. And so we'll often have lunch together and try to find some new vegan-friendly spot.
Yeah, I mean, that is a totally vegan spot, but you don't have to be totally vegan to be vegan friendly.
Well, and I often feel like whenever I can have a meal that doesn't involve any animal products, all the better. So, and if it's delicious and in my neighborhood, why not?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's sometimes fun to eat with my sister and return to my vegetarian roots for a few days.
No, I really,
the only thing that frustrated me is I have a lot of great vegetarian recipes up my sleeve, but she did not want home cooking because she lives in a rural area. She just wanted to go out, you know, which I understand. Like, it's not like there's any vegan diners in Farmville.
That is true.
But it was a great time.
I'm so glad. I'm glad you got some time with your sister. So, magazines. This has been a magazine-heavy episode,
well, I'm a magazine junkie. I did a lot of the planning for this episode, so you're going to get a lot of magazine
talk. I like it. So there are a couple
Actually, you inspired this with your Instagram.
I did. So there's a new magazine that has just been published recently called Cured. And it is the first magazine entirely devoted to fermented, cured, brined foods. So you may have seen it out there because the cover is sort of spectacular. It is a, I guess it's a cured ham in the Italian style. I guess it's a prosciutto, right?
It looked like a prosciutto to me.
And so it's the full cured joint.
Hind quarter.
Yes. Perched up in a high heel to make it look like it's a shapely leg. It's hard to describe. I'm trying. It's sort of titillating, I think, is the goal, their goal there. But obviously, prosciutto is a cured meat, so it's an appropriate cover topic. But so the issue is all features articles from really well-established food writers like Jane Lear, William Moyes Weaver, who's a local writer, Fuchsia Dunlop, all talking about pickles and cured things, booze, you know, rotting things that are a delicacy, gorgeous moldy things, all about, like, you know.
Are there recipes?
There aren't a lot of recipes. It's more about sort of the celebration. There are a few. Like, I believe that Edward Lee's article about persimmon vinegar has a recipe. But it's really about sort of more celebrating and honoring these rich food traditions, because although in recent years, cured and fermented and brined things have become more popular again. In the U.S., there was a long period where we thought bacteria was bad and it was all about eliminating bacteria. And now we're inviting it back into our foods. And so this magazine is really celebrating that. I love it.
The magazine's editor is Dara Goldstein, who food nerds like us might know as the longtime editor of Gastronomica.
Yeah.
And I believe she's like a professor of Russian literature or something. She has some kind of Russian expertise and I believe heritage.
Yeah.
So to me, that kind of makes sense. Those Eastern European cultures are so fermentation friendly. It sort of seems like a good fit to me.
Totally. But it's just, if you have any sort of interest in, you know, cured, fermented, brined, you know, anytime that you've got sort of microorganism activity in your food, you should definitely pick up a copy.
Can I read your copy when you're done?
Absolutely.
I'm not picking up anything lately because I'm renovating a house.
And it is a little bit expensive. It's $20. If you order it in the U.S., the shipping is free. But if you're in Canada, the rest of the world, you have to pay for shipping. They're printing it twice a year. And so it's – but it is beautiful. And when I'm done with it, Joy, I'll pass it along.
Yeah, I'm really interested. I like all things fermentable. And in my corner, I also have been reading a niche food magazine called Sift. Sift has been around now for 2 years?
A year and a half, 2 years, something like that.
Sift is a magazine published by King Arthur, the flour company, and it's always all about home baking.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that sounds like it should be bad, right? Like, it sounds like it should be very marketing and driven and cheesy. And I guess you are probably going to buy more flour if you read this magazine because – you're going to want to bake, but
it's beautiful.
I love it.
It's a great magazine.
I did impulse buy this at the store.
Did you?
Yeah, for $13.
Well, it's like a cookbook, though.
And what got me is the cover is dedicated to holiday cookies. And I'm always looking for fun new holiday cookies to make. Some of the recipes are from people like Dory Greenspan's new book, All About Cookies. Or I know there's one in there from Mindy, the chocolate lady from Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that there's going to be lots of good ideas in there. But they also have like a big story on crepes. There's a thing on casseroles. And there's even like a section on vegetarian dishes. I actually haven't read the whole thing cover to cover yet, as I will do at some point. There's like a beautiful section on layer cakes, which where's the one that really caught my eye?
I do love good layer cake.
It's like a... some kind of Mexican chocolate cake with marshmallows all piled on top.
Wow.
Anyway, so I don't know. I think it's worth picking up if you love cooking and if you love magazines like me. The pages are very heavy and it's just really, it's really a beautiful publication.
Well, and I find that the folks from King Arthur, that everything they do sort of thoughtfully and beautifully. And this magazine just reemphasizes how earnest and thoughtful they are about the information they're putting out there. I love their website.
Their recipes are super reliable.
I read their blog regularly.
That's the other thing. Like, I love a recipe that I just know is going to work.
I actually just placed an order from them recently that arrived this week where I got, after being in Ireland, I loved the Irish brown bread, mm-hmm. but we don't have wheat in the grocery store that you can make that. You can really recreate it. But
what kind of wheat flour do you need?
It's a super rough stone ground whole wheat flour. And so you can buy it from King Arthur Flour. So that is one of the things on my docket for later today is to make a little loaf of Irish brown soda bread. And I'm really excited.
I do not begrudge them this at all, you know, because they're trying to be in business. But a lot of times their recipes do call for something that is kind of a quirky thing that only they make and you end up having to order it from them. For example, recently, probably on Pinterest or somewhere out on the social media, a recipe for flatbread, like a soft flatbread, caught my eye. And the secret ingredient is this potato flour that I have so far been unable to find. And I know I'm going to have to break down and order it from them.
Well, if you're ever up their way in Vermont, going to the store is worthwhile.
What's that like?
It's beautiful. When Scott and I were on our honeymoon 7 years ago, that was one of the stops. I was like, we're going to Vermont. We have to go to King Arthur Flour. And it was delightful. I loved it.
Yeah, I haven't tried any of the recipes yet, but I'll report back. I'm definitely going to make some of these cookies.
So real quick, we're going to cram a little extra segment in here today and talk quickly about holiday drinks. We've been talking about cookies, all sorts of good holiday stuff. Joy, what are you drinking this holiday season?
Typically in the winter around the holidays, I default to my favorite cocktails based on brown spirits, which are not necessarily holiday, but to me, they are appropriate for the dark days of December, and they are the Old Fashioned and the Manhattan.
Always and good.
I do like them both, made with either bourbon or rye. I might slightly prefer rye. What about you?
This time of year, I like anything with bubbles. You know, I'm definitely a fan. You put on this list, but I second it. A Lambrusco, which is a sparkling red, which always feels very
festive
and appropriate.
It's also typically lighter in alcohol.
Yeah.
In my mind, I think of it as the pizza wine because it's almost like soda, but it's not sweet. It's not – the good versions are not sweet, but it has that – it's fun. It's fizzy. One thing that bums me out is it's almost impossible to find in the States store.
I know. It's really frustrating.
I recently had a glass at William Mulheron & Sons over in Fishtown. It was terrific.
I know. I don't know why it's so hard to find because I love it. You know, and then other things like this time of year, I'll make pick. Oh,
I want to say more about the bubbles.
Oh, go for it.
I've been a big Prosecco enthusiast in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everyone loves champagne, but champagne can be kind of expensive.
Yeah.
But I have recently traded my budget choice from being Prosecco to being Cava.
Really?
And actually, you know why? It's because I read that book that I borrowed from you and never gave back. The book about real food, fake food.
Uh-huh.
What was that? What it was called?
I think so.
But he talked about how Cava, the name is protected. Like if it says Cava, you know, you pretty much know that it's going to be Cava. And that's not exactly true of Prosecco.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
the other another good holiday drink, a non-alcoholic one, is this time of year I'll make a essentially a cranberry shrub. So I'll make a pickled, sweetened cranberry. I'll do cranberries with some apple cider vinegar, sugar. Get that liquid, and then that'll be sort of my gold for holiday drinks. I'll mix it with a little bit of sparkling water. It's also a dollop is good and cheap, like Prosecco or something like that, to sort of sweeten and tang it up a little. You can, if you're doing it with sparkling water, you can add a little drop of vodka if you need it to be boozy. It's also good with tonic water because it brings a little extra sweetness to it. So any sort of festive cranberry shrub, I'll pickle them and then drain the liquid and use that too. So
that sounds great.
It's really nice.
My favorite non-alcoholic holiday time beverage is hot chocolate.
That's also good.
So cozy.
Yeah. And then there's always sparkling apple cider, which makes me happy every time.
I don't like that.
Really? Oh, I love it.
I don't know why. I've just never had any, even the local ones now that are supposedly good.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know why. Maybe I'll keep trying.
Yeah, you should.
Do you have any favorites?
No, I mean, I tend to just pick up what whatever's available.
Yeah. What about, do we have time to talk about this? I think so.
Go for
eggnog. Have you ever made it?
I have never made it. It's one of those things I've always meant to do and I never have.
I really want to. Maybe this will be the year. It's probably not going to be with everything that's going on in my life, but you know, you can do a homemade eggnog and like age it.
I know. I've never had the refrigerator space to do that.
Anyway, okay, we'll revisit this topic next year of aged eggnog.
So real quickly, let's talk about at the market, what we're buying, parsnips.
Love parsnips.
Love them. They are, I feel like the lesser beloved root vegetable. I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, never a parsnip did we see. It was always carrots. But I love parsnips for their sweetness. They're sort of a little bit denser than a carrot. And my favorite thing to do is just cut them into sort of strips and roast them.
They're delicious roasted. Yeah. But if I am buying parsnips, it's probably because I want to add them to mashed potatoes.
Ooh.
Like a mashed potato that's half potato, half parsnip.
Uh-huh.
Now you really have something.
That sounds amazing.
With sour cream.
Oh my God.
Sour cream is my mashed potato fat of choice. I don't know about you.
I typically do butter and milk, but sour cream, it adds tang.
Brilliant. Very good.
Brilliant.
I do like them roasted. And mm-hmm. also, you can slice them with your vegetable peeler very thin.
Uh-huh.
Brush them with oil. Put them inside of a sheet pan with a silpat and then set another sheet pan on top and bake it kind of for a long time. And then you get something that approaches parsnip bacon.
Oh, my God.
Especially if you use like a smoked salt or a smoked paprika on it.
Uh-huh.
That's a delicious
parsnip. God, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Now, you've also done parsnips in a sweet application.
Oh, parsnip cake.
Yes. Tell me about your parsnip cake.
It has maple seeds. It's like a carrot cake, but, mm-hmm. you know, with parsnips. And the one that I make has maple in it, and maple mm-hmm. in the cake to give it like, I don't know, just a plain parsnip to me has something spicy about it. I can't really get any more specific than that.
Yeah.
And not that maple syrup is spicy, but they sort of go together somehow to me. And then it has like a very maple-y frosting.
Sounds delicious. Is it a layer cake or a...
You can do it in layers or you can do just one 8-inch round. I think that's how I made it last time I made it.
Sounds great.
It is really good.
Well, do you have the recipe
floating around? I don't know. I do not know, and I can't commit to finding it. If you really want the recipe for this cake, please leave a comment and I will try to find it for you.
Yeah. And then also, I do love just parsnips in soup, especially like often Scott is not eating carbs. And so I feel like I've said that sentence on this show many times. But so potatoes are out for soup. And so I'll do some parsnip slices. And they bring sort of a similar potato depth to soup that I really like.
Yeah.
So they're good that way. But yeah, parsnip, I feel like we should all be eating more parsnips.
It is a little bit of an overlooked mm-hmm. vegetable. Definitely pick them up for your mashed potatoes. Like, this is really a mashed potatoes upgrade.
Now I'm going to have to try that.
I often do it. It's almost like if I make mashed potatoes without parsnips, it feels like they're missing something.
Do you just chunk them up and boil them with the potatoes?
Mm-hmm, right along with them. Okay. I don't know if they cook at the exact same time, but when I'm making a mashed potato, I'm always like overcooking things slightly anyway. So.
And then are they soft enough that you can just mash them with a masher, or do you puree them at all?
I have a masher. I don't.
Okay.
Do you puree? Do you have a ricer? What do you do?
I mostly just mash with a masher. I have tried other potato mashing options, and I find that the masher is just the best.
I would like a ricer, but, and I've had a couple in my life, but they break.
Yeah. I had the OXO ricer, and I still didn't love it.
Huh. Did it not break?
It didn't break. It was just hard to do.
Hard to get the potatoes
through. Yeah, and also, I feel like I have a food mill, and I feel like if you have a food mill, you don't really need a ricer. The food mill does the job.
It's true. But still, you just use your masher.
Yeah.
It's like a rustic, chunky.
Well, and when I make mashed potatoes for the holidays, I'm making like 10 pounds, mm-hmm. and I don't feel like putting that much through a ricer or a food mill. I'm just going to boil them, drain them, put the pot back on the heat for a minute or two to let the water cook out, and then I just go to town with a masher.
I do make a small batch regularly for Dan and I. We love mashed potatoes with certain things.
Yeah.
Meatloaf. I don't know if I've talked about it on this show, but there's a sautéed chicken thigh with lemon and anchovy sauce that I love.
Ooh.
That is just super with mashed potatoes. Anyway.
Well,
are we done? I think we're all set.
We are done. And we covered a wide-ranging assortment of topics today, and I love that.
Tons of topics.
And like always, now I'm hungry. So that's it for this week's installment of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, to Raina Rose for providing the music, and to Philly Cam for providing studio space. And thank you guys for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. You can sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.